would be able to intervene, Franz said. Unfortunately, the hijackers apparently moved faster than she anticipated. He turned back to Lamiov. I've been studying the criminal law agreements between the Klar and the Stibler, Your Venerante. From the tiered penalty clauses involved, and given the Klar Patriarch's determined efforts to catch the criminals without assistance, I suspect at least one of the hijackers is a Klar cousin. Lamiov huffed out a sigh.
Blood, meat commander,
he corrected, his voice heavy.
It's Klar blood. And you're right. You saw the agreements. You know the penalties if anyone of that rank commits a crime against us.
Thras nodded, wincing as he finally understood. Families took their delicately balanced relationships with other families very seriously. A blood relative committing a crime like this could rock that relationship to the core, which was why there were always huge disincentives written into family accords. But only if the perpetrator was caught by the victimized family. If the Klar could grab him first and cover up proof of his crime, both families could officially pretend it never happened. Unfortunately, allowing the Klar the freedom to pursue the hijackers would leave Patriarch Lamiov and the Stibla sitting idly with some mysterious and valuable cargo hanging in the balance.
I presume you've offered help in catching him? He asked.
I've spent the past 3 hours making every possible variant on a suggestion to Patriarch Rivlex,
Lamiov said.
He's rejected all my offers, including a one-time leniency for the penalty if our families jointly take him into custody.
Worried about the aftershocks, Thras murmured. No one likes dealing with one-time agreements.
Understandably, Lamiov said. At the same time, I can't afford to just sit by and trust Patriarch Rivlex to bring this to a satisfactory end.
What about us, then? Thras asked. Thrawn and me. The hijackers haven't committed any acts against the myth, so we're not encumbered by those agreements or their penalty clauses. Would the Klar work with us if the Stibler stayed out of it?
Lamiov gave a faint smile.
That was also one of the options I presented, Syndic Thras. It was also rejected.
He shook his head.
In a way, I can't really blame him. He has no idea of the seriousness of the situation.
Then perhaps you should tell him, Thrawn said.
No,
Lamiov said firmly.
That information isn't mine to share.
Can you tell us, then?
Thrawn persisted.
It would help if we knew exactly what we were trying to retrieve.
Lamiov gave a little snort.
What part of not mine to share was unclear, Mid-Commander?
Understood, Thrawn said. Perhaps you'll change your mind after we deliver it to you.
After you deliver it?
Lamiov asked with a wan smile.
Thrawn, the Klar already said they won't work with us, Thras reminded him.
That's why we're going to find it ourselves, Thrawn said calmly. Can you tell us, Patriarch, where the Klar patrol ship pilot sent a report after the hijacking?
Excuse me,
Lamiov said, frowning at Thrawn.
You're going to find it?
Along with Senior Aide Lapinsik, of course, Thrawn said. I assume that's the reason you're sending him to prepare a patrol ship. I ask again, Patriarch, where did the Klar pilot send her report?
How do you know what Senior Aide Lapinsik is doing?
Lamiov asked, still frowning. Thrawn glanced at Thras, the same hint of resignation on his face that Thras had seen earlier in Lamiov's office.
Aside from the few moments when he was greeting Syndic Thras, Senior Aide Lapinsik has been at your side since I arrived, he said. We've watched him anticipate your orders and information requests. Clearly he's your closest confidant. Yet now, when you're negotiating what may be a crucial agreement between us, he's nowhere to be seen.
Yet I didn't know myself until just now that you will offer your cooperation in this matter,
Lamiov pointed out.
Of course you did, Thrawn said. That was your whole purpose in bringing us here in the first place.
You planned to maneuver us into this position, Thras said, feeling like an idiot as he finally got it.
Politics was supposed to be his strong point. He really should have figured this out himself.
Can we assume Patriarch Thuraki also knows about this? No, I'm wrong,
he corrected himself before Lamiov could answer.
Patriarch Thuraki suggested it, didn't he?
As a matter of fact, he did,
Lamiov conceded.
With the concurrence and support of General Bakif.
He smiled faintly.
I confess, I thought both of them were inflating your investigative and deductive skills far beyond reality.
Hopefully your doubts have been calmed, Thrawn said. The patrol pilot's transmissions?
She made two calls. The first to Kormit, the second to Rigar.
Thras frowned. Rigar? Location of the Chief Klar family stronghold was an obvious choice to send an alert. But Kormit?
What's at Kormit? He asked.
A Klar fleet depot,
Thrawn said, frowning down at his questus.
Currently anchored by the light cruiser Orisin. The fact that the pilot called there first suggests the hijackers are heading southeast, and she hoped family forces could intercept them before they left the Ascendancy.
Could they intercept them? Thras asked. That class of transport is pretty fast.
But they'll have to carry the Stibler freighter while they transfer the cargo, which will slow them considerably, Thrawn said. Their other option would be to stop somewhere while the transfer takes place. Either way, there'll be a delay that the Klar clearly hope to take advantage of.
You think they're heading to some alien world, then?
Lamiov asked.
I think so, yes, Thrawn said. There are a number of border worlds that function as rendezvous points between Chiss thieves and some of the small nations of the region. The more cautious ones use a rotating schedule, with the rendezvous point shifting each month from one planet to another. The Klar must know, or suspect, that these particular hijackers favor the group to the southeast, which is why the pilot sent her first alert to Kormit.
If you're right, the Klar have a considerable head start,
Lamiov pointed out.
Only if they know which specific world the hijackers are heading to, Thrawn said. I don't believe they do.
Why do you say that?
Lamiov asked.
Because you said you spent 3 hours discussing the issue, Thrawn said. The only reason for Patriarch Rivlex to keep you busy that long was if he was trying to offer you hope of an agreement, and thus delay your people from beginning their own pursuit.
So we have a chance, Thras said.
Yes, Thrawn said. And I believe it's a good one. It all depends on whether we can reach the hijacked ship first.
And you know where it is?
Lamiov asked. Thrawn held up his questus.
As a matter of fact, your Venerante, he said. I believe I do.
Chapter 10.
Samacro was sound asleep in his cabin when the call came in from Senior Commander Carroll that the Springhawk's first officer was wanted on the bridge. He found Carroll standing at the helm station, conversing in a low voice to the pilot and looking out the viewport at the starscape.
All right, I'm here, Samacro said,
sending a quick look around at the status displays as he started across the bridge.
You said there was a crisis?
I think so, yes, Mid-Captain, Carroll said hesitantly.
Samacro came to a stop.
You think so?
Yes, sir,
Carroll said, flinching a bit at his superior's tone.
Mid-Commander Aeclior was attempting to continue our trip to the Ascendancy when he realized the stars weren't lining up properly.
What do you mean, not lining up?
Samacro asked, starting forward again.
How far off course are we?
That's the problem, Carroll said. We don't know. We're still trying to figure that out.
That makes no sense,
Samacro insisted, eyeing the starlight blazing coldly through the viewport. He reached the other two and gave the nav displays a careful look. Carroll was right. The pattern wasn't anywhere near where it should be.
Aeclior has checked both the known sharp variable stars and the quasi-stellars, Carroll continued. He's looking at the other major microwave sources.
He paused, and Samacro saw his throat work.
I'm wondering, sir, if there could be something wrong with our Skywalker,
he added, lowering his voice.
She's not supposed to lose third sight this young, but stranger things have happened.
So they have,
Samacro murmured, gazing again at the stars.
And she just came off a full 10 hours at the nav station,
Carroll reminded him.
If she was accidentally going the wrong direction that whole time, it could take us a long time to sort this out.
Maybe not.
Samacro took a deep breath, then turned and headed back toward the bridge hatch.
Continue your analysis, Senior Commander, he said over his shoulder. Find out where we are. I'll return shortly.
It was supposed to be a sleep period for both the Greyshrike Skywalker and her caregiver. To Samacro's complete lack of surprise, Thalias was still awake and dressed when he arrived at their suite.
Good evening, Mid-Captain,
she greeted him gravely as she stepped out of the open hatchway to let him inside.
I've been expecting you.
I imagine you have,
Samacro said, looking across at the closed hatch of Ciri's sleeping room. Good. This wasn't the conversation he wanted the girl listening in on.
I take it Skywalker Ciri won't be joining us.
No, she was too tired,
Thalias said, gesturing Samacro toward the day room couch.
Won't you sit down?
Just as well,
Samacro said, ignoring both the invitation and the couch.
I trust you realize that during wartime, disobeying a direct order is punishable by death.
A muscle in Thalias' cheek tightened.
I guess it's lucky we're not at war.
Given everything that's happened over the past few months, I wouldn't make any blanket assumptions if I were you,
Samacro ground out.
I'd also take this situation a lot more seriously.
I am taking it seriously, Mid-Captain,
Thalias said, her voice going dark.
Senior Captain Thrawn is heading alone into horrible danger. I couldn't just stand idly by and let that happen.
So you talk Ciri into committing mutiny and hijack the ship?
You don't want to let him die either, sir, she said,
her voice quavering a little with emotion.
I know.
What you know and what I want are completely irrelevant, Samacro countered. I've been given an order, and my job is to carry it out. If you persist in standing in the way, I can have you confined.
You think Cheery will navigate the ship if I'm locked up?
I think Cheery knows her duty, Simacro said. Maybe better than you do. If not, we'll just head for home via jump by jump. That will give both of you plenty of time to regret your decision and wonder what kind of futures you have, if any.
Is that supposed to scare me?
It's supposed to bring you back to your senses, Simacro said. Right now, all we've got is a failure of the nav system to locate our position. If you and Cheery turn us back toward the Ascendancy right now, nothing more needs to be said about it.
And then what happens to Senior Captain Thrawn?
He rises or falls by his own decisions, just like all the rest of us have to, Simacro said. That's how the universe works, caregiver.
No, Thalias said flatly. No, I don't accept that. We don't all live in our own private niches, with no one else affecting or being affected by what we do.
She gestured towards Simacro.
What about you, Mid-Captain? Are you willing to just let him go off into danger?
I've already said I don't have a choice.
What if you did?
Simacro cocked his head slightly.
I'm listening.
I did a quick calculation of how long it'll take to get home via jump by jump, Thalia said. My numbers may be off a little.
She gestured the point away.
Anyway, what I'm saying is that if Cheery navigates, we can get to Sunrise and then back to the Ascendancy faster than heading back from here via jump by jump.
But slower than if she took us directly home.
Yes,
Thalias conceded.
You also assume she'll side with you and not with her legal commander,
Simacro added.
That she'll risk the dishonor and criminal charges of mutiny just because you want her to.
Thalias' eyes drifted away from Simacro's, a tumble of conflicting emotions chasing each other across her face.
You have it backward, Mid-Captain,
she said at last.
This isn't my idea. It's hers.
Right, Simacro scoffed. As if a 10-year-old girl...
He broke off at the expression on Thalias' face.
Why would she do that?
She's afraid for Senior Captain Thrawn, Thalias said. She spent a lot of time with him, you know, out at the edge of Lesser Space. I think she probably knows him better than even you do. She knows the kind of tasks he takes on, and she knows this one could get him killed.
She seemed to brace herself.
And I think... she thinks... the Magus agrees we have to help him.
Simacro felt a chill run up his spine. Thrawn had told him about his conversation with Thalias and the idea that the Magus might be intruding into Cheery's dreams. But he dismissed it as fuzzy-edged speculation at best and complete fantasy at worst.
I thought the Magus only did that when she was asleep.
I thought so too, Thalias said. But the Magus was in hibernation at the time. Maybe they both had to be asleep for it to work. Maybe now it only works when they're both awake.
And you didn't say anything?
Simacro demanded.
It didn't occur to you that it might be something Senior Captain Thrawn needed to know?
I didn't know about it until I told Cheery you'd ordered us back home, Thalias said. She hadn't said anything until then.
Then it should have occurred to her to tell us,
Simacro muttered, Thalias' revelation swirling through his mind like a whirlwind. The Skywalkers and their third sight were one of the Ascendancy's most closely guarded secrets. If this alien could intrude or tap into that ability, the consequences could be catastrophic. And with that, This whole thing had suddenly taken an unexpected turn.
Why is she steering Ciri around anyway? Just for the fun of it?
I don't think there's any real control involved, Thalia said. At least, that's not what Ciri says. The Magus is afraid for the Guardian's safety, and sees Ciri and the Springhawk as his only protection.
She's calling him the Guardian now?
Simacro asked sourly.
What does that mean? She's adopted him into her clan?
I don't know how she sees him, Thalia confessed. I just know she thinks he's in danger, and that...
And that we're the only ones who can save him, Simacro said. Yes, you already said that.
Because if another battle dreadnought is waiting at sunrise, Senior Captain Thrawn and the Pakosh will be in big trouble, Thalia said.
Their blockade frigate plus the Springhawk won't do much better,
Simacro pointed out.
Not in a straight toe-to-toe fight. The last time we tangled with one of them, it took the combined power of the Vigilant and Greyshrike to take it down.
I know, Thalia said, wincing. Senior Captain Thrawn showed me the report.
So you realize going there would likely just mean death for all of us,
Simacro concluded.
Does the Magus know that? Or does she even care?
I don't know, Thalia confessed. All I know is that Ciri cares, and she's convinced we need to be there.
Simacro looked at Ciri's closed hatch.
What about you? He asked. What do you say about all this?
I don't think my vote really counts, Thalia said. You're the Springhawk's current commander. Ciri is your Skywalker. All that matters is what you two decide.
Except that if I don't side with Ciri, we're a long time getting home,
Simacro pointed out.
Doesn't sound like I get much of a vote either.
Your commander's in trouble.
Thalia hunched her shoulders.
At the very least, we should go watch him get himself killed. It would help the Sindicure keep its files tidy.
That it would,
Simacro agreed heavily.
And we all know how much they like keeping records.
I understand if you don't want to go along with this, Mid-Captain, Thalia said. All I can say is that Ciri thinks it has to be done, and I trust her judgment.
I realize that,
Simacro said, eyeing her closely.
Let me make my position clear. Heading to sunrise would be a violation of my commander's explicit order. The fact that following his order might lead to his death doesn't change my obligation to obey it.
I know, Thalia said. But I thought...
I'm not finished,
Simacro interrupted.
At the same time, the Skywalker is a critical part of every expansionary defense fleet voyage. Over the months that Ciri has been aboard, I've kept a close eye on her moods and needs. I've never known her to present any outrageous or frivolous demands. And her current defiance of her orders is so unlike her that I'm inclined to take her fears seriously.
He looked again at the Skywalker's sleeping room.
Luckily for her, I'm the commander on the scene. That means I'm authorized to change or ignore orders as I deem the situation requires.
Are you saying...
Thalia seemed to wilt.
Thank you, Mid-Captain.
Don't thank me yet, Simacro warned. If we're going to make it in time, there are needs, and there are conditions.
He lifted a hand, started ticking off fingers.
Point one. If we're going to get to Sunrise and then back to Naperar before Supreme General Bakif starts worrying about us, the two of you are going to have to push yourselves right to the limit. Short breaks, short sleeps, meals on the run. basically you're going to be living on the bridge. If you don't think you can handle that, say so now, and I'll order Senior Commander Carol to turn us back toward the Ascendancy.
We can do it, Thalia said firmly.
I hope so, Simacro said. Point two. You don't talk about this thing with the mages to anyone. Not here, not at sunrise, not back at Naparar. Whatever needs to be said to the Council or Sindicure, I'll be the one to say it.
Understood.
And point three.
Simacro let his eyes narrow.
Before we do anything more, before I let Skywalker Ciri back on the bridge, you make it abundantly clear to her that if this whole thing goes face down, it could mean the end of all our careers. Not just yours and mine, but hers as well. If she had hopes of joining any of the ruling families, she can forget them right now. In fact, even the 40 might not want her after this. If that's something you don't think she can handle, say so right now.
She can handle it, Thalia said.
She took another look at his expression.
But I'll make sure,
she added.
You do that, Simacro said. How long has she been asleep?
Thalius looked at the chrono.
About 20 minutes.
How long does she usually sleep?
About 8 hours at a time.
She's got 4, Simacro said. 4 hours and 15 minutes from now, I expect to see you both on the bridge.
Thalius winced, but her nod was firm enough.
We'll be there.
So will I, Simacro said. Until then, I'll get us traveling jump by jump. I assume Ciri was taking us straight towards sunrise?
From the point where she took over, yes.
Good, Simacro said. Now that I know we were looking at the wrong part of the charts, we'll be able to calculate our position easily enough. Remember, 4 1/4 hours. Don't be late.
We won't,
Thalius promised.
And remember that the Pakash have a Pathfinder with them, Simacro warned. If we're going to get to sunrise before them, or even before it's all over, we need to push it.
Don't worry, Mid-Captain,
Thalius promised.
We'll make it.
I hope so, Simacro said. For all our sakes.
The sweet hatch closed behind Simacro, and for a few seconds, Thalius stood facing it. Then, with a tired sigh, she walked back to the couch and sat down.
You heard?
She called.
Yes?
Ciri's voice came as the girl walked into the day room. Not from her own sleeping room, with its closed hatch, but from the open hatch into Thalius's room, which Simacro had luckily not thought to check.
Thank you.
For what? Thalius bit out, with the emotional turmoil of the confrontation draining away, the hard, cold facts of what she'd just done and what she'd just agreed to were roaring back.
For letting you listen in? Or for agreeing to work with Mid-Captain Simacro to destroy your future? For letting me listen,
Ciri said. Her voice and face were calm, though Thalius couldn't tell if that was from some inner self-assurance or if the girl was simply too exhausted to feel anything.
No one's future has been destroyed. I know,
Thalius said, feeling a brief rush of shame. There was no reason to dump her own doubts and guilt on Ciri.
So you heard his conditions? What do you think? We can do it,
Ciri said.
We have to.
I know, Thalius said.
Well, you'd better get to sleep now. Those 4 hours are going to go by really quickly.
Okay,
Ciri said. She crossed to her sleeping room.
I have a question,
she said, pausing with her hand over the hatch release.
Why did you say that about the Magus, calling him the Guardian?
I thought Mid-Captain Simacro needed more persuasion,
Thalias admitted.
I guess it sounded good. Why do you ask?
I just wondered,
Ciri said.
Because I didn't think I'd told you. Anyway, good night.
She keyed the hatch open and started inside.
Wait a minute,
Thalias called after her.
What do you mean you never told me? Never told me what?
About the Magus talking about the Guardian of her people,
Ciri said, pausing again and half-turning to give Thalias a puzzled look.
I didn't think I had, but I guess I must have.
No, you didn't, Thalias said, a strange feeling creeping over her as she stared at the girl. Never. I just... I thought I made it up.
I don't know,
Ciri said.
Doesn't matter. Wake me up when it's time, okay?
Sure.
Thalias watched as the girl went inside and closed the hatch behind her. Then, her head reeling from fatigue, she headed to her own sleeping room. Reeling from fatigue and from dark, ominous thoughts. She had just made up the Guardian bit, hadn't she? Of course she had. It was pure coincidence that it happened to match something the Magus had told Ciri. Because Thalias couldn't hear the Magus. Her third sight was long gone. She couldn't navigate ships or see a few seconds into the future or do anything else that Skywalkers could do. She certainly didn't hear any alien voices in her head. Absolutely not. And yet... Guardian. Carefully, she made sure to set an alarm for the time Simacro had specified. She was exhausted, but there was something she had to do before she slept. Something she probably should have done a long time ago. The data cylinder senior aide Thavik had given her on Naperar was tucked away in the bottom of one of her dresser drawers. She retrieved it and her questis, kicked off her shoes, and laid down on her bed. And with all the fears and uncertainties still swirling around in her brain, she began to read.
Kilori didn't know the name of the system Thrawn had directed him to guide the Pockian ship to. He wasn't sure it even had one that was known to anyone outside of its inhabitants.
Certainly neither General Yiv nor Jixtus had ever mentioned the place to him, and that worried him. Though, to be fair, right now, everything about this trip worried him. During his time of secretly serving Yiv, he'd gotten used to getting advanced warning of battles or incursions, or even just critical points in the Nicardoon plans of conquest that the general needed a pathfinder to guide his ships to. There'd been less of that under Jixtus. The Grisk played things a lot closer to himself. And of course, he had his own navigators to rely on for secret travel. But Yiv was gone, and Jixtus was off somewhere orchestrating some scheme or other, and Kilori had been handed over to the Kilgis. They didn't like him. They considered him vastly inferior to themselves, and they hadn't told him anything about their mission to Rapak beyond the fact that he was to take them there and then guide them to a rendezvous point General Crowfip would specify. But now, even that small crumb of forewarning was gone. Kilori was with the Pakosh and Thrawn now, and in 2 more days he would be thrown completely unprepared into the unknown. 2 more days for him to worry about what might be awaiting them at the end of the trip. He brooded about it as he sipped at his Galara tea leaf, his cheek winglets beating out a nervous cadence. 6 more minutes until his break was over. and then it would be back under his headset and back into hyperspace. At least while he was wrapped in the folds of the great presence, he could mostly forget his current situation. But only mostly. Behind him came the sound of the bridge hatch opening. Kilori turned, expecting to see Wingali Foar Mar-Oksa, or his commando team lieutenant, here to confirm the ship's progress with the bridge crew. It wasn't either of them. It was Thrawn.
Kilori Avuanduolon.
The blueskin greeted him gravely as he crossed to Kilori Station. Those glowing red eyes flicked back and forth across the bridge as he walked, taking in everything.
I understand our journey is on schedule.
Yes,
Kilori confirmed.
I estimate 2 more days until we arrive.
Excellent, Thrawn said. How is the headset working?
It's not quite as isolating as a true sensory deprivation headset would be,
Kilori told him, looking at the headset resting on his control board.
But it's adequate.
He threw a look of his own around the bridge.
The Bakas have also learned how to be quiet. That helps considerably.
I'll be certain to pass on your approval to Commander Wingali, Thrawn said. Who is Jixtus?
Kilori forced his winglets to remain motionless. He'd known this conversation was coming. He'd known with equal certainty that there would be no way to get out of it. And that was a huge problem. Everyone who'd ever met Jixtus, who'd seen the pains he took to conceal even his physical appearance, knew how secretive he was. He would not appreciate his name being bandied about, especially not to people he intended to destroy. But Jixtus wasn't here. Thrawn was. And in his own way, he was just as dangerous as the Grisk. All Kilori could do was try to give enough information to satisfy Thrawn without setting himself up to die a slow death when Jixtus caught up with him.
I'm not absolutely sure,
he told Thrawn.
He's very secretive, but he seems to be the one directing the Kilji Illumin.
You said earlier that Jixtus was merely their associate, Thrawn said. Now you say he's their leader?
Kilori felt his winglets twitch. He'd hoped Thrawn hadn't been in range when he was babbling his big mouth to what he thought were Nicardoon. But of course, Wingali would have played the recording for him afterward.
Actually, I'm not certain how it works, he said. I have the impression that Jixtus sometimes gives directives, but sometimes also accepts them.
Directives from General Arius Nakir.
This time, even Kilori's best efforts couldn't stop his winglets from reacting. He hadn't given Wingali that name. He was certain of it. How and where could Thrawn have picked it up?
I don't know who Jixtus speaks to.
But you know General Arius Nakir's name.
I've heard it, yes,
Kilori hedged.
You also know that Jixtus commanded General Yiv.
They were associates.
You know that he commanded the Nicardoon.
Kilori's winglets flattened across his cheeks.
All I know for certain is that they were associates.
That's not what you told Wingali at Rapark.
I thought I was talking to a group of Nicardoon,
Kilori said.
I told them what I thought would soften their resistance and get them to let us pass without violence.
A commendable goal, Thrawn said. Your General Crowfip also said the Kilji commanded Jixtus, not the other way around.
I don't know what General Crowfip thinks,
Kilori said.
He does have an inflated opinion of himself and his people, though.
Had, an inflated opinion, Thrawn corrected. He's dead now.
Hilori winced.
Yes, I know.
For a moment, Thrawn was silent.
Something you should consider, Hilori of Uandualon, he said. Eventually, I will know everything. Everything about Jixtus, the Kilgis, the Nicardoon.
His glowing eyes seemed to glitter.
And you. If you lie to me, I will eventually know that. Do you wish me to explain what would happen then?
A long shiver ran through Kilori's body, sending his winglets stretching rigidly outward.
No, he said. But I really don't know very much. Jixtus doesn't tell me more than he thinks I need to know.
Understandable,
Thrawn said. The quiet threat in his voice was gone now. Just two beings having a conversation.
Tell me about the Grisks.
Jixtus said that word,
Kilori said.
But I don't know if they're a species, an organization, a family, or even just a philosophy.
Like the Kilgi goal of universal enlightenment.
It could be, yes.
What's Jixtus's goal?
Kilori snorted, his winglets fluttering.
The same as that of General Yiv, the Kilgis, and everyone else in this part of the chaos,
he said.
The neutralization of the Chiss Ascendancy as a threat.
There was another moment of silence.
Is that truly how we're perceived?
Thrawn asked at last.
If you lie to me, I will eventually know that.
A lot of nations and species see you that way. Yes,
Kilori said reluctantly.
I see.
Thrawn gestured to Kilori's headset.
Your break time is nearly over. One final question. The pathfinder of the other Kilgi ship, the one we're pursuing to Sunrise, is he a friend of yours?
No,
Kilori said.
Actually, I hardly know him. Why do you ask?
Because when our journey ends, he will most likely die,
Thrawn said, his voice calm.
I see,
Kilori said. He hesitated, knowing down deep that this was probably a stupid thing to say, especially right now, but he couldn't resist.
And you wonder that the Chiss don't have any friends?
Thrawn's expression hardened, and for that single, awful moment, Kilori thought he'd made the final mistake of his life.
Let me explain something, Kilori of Uandualon,
the Chiss said softly.
My job, the sole reason for my existence, is to defend the Chiss Ascendancy and protect my people. I will do whatever is necessary to achieve that goal. And I will allow nothing and no one to stand in my way. Do you understand?
With a supreme effort, Kilori kept his winglets motionless.
Yes,
he said.
Good.
Thrawn held his gaze another moment, then inclined his head.
And now, I believe it's time we both return to our appointed tasks.
Yes, sir.
Kilori turned back to his station and picked up his headset. Behind him, he heard the bridge hatch open again. He put on the headset and started to adjust it.
We continue on?
An unfamiliar voice came.
We continue on, mages,
Thrawn confirmed.
Have you news?
I do,
the other said.
Friends will be prepared to greet us when we arrive.
It's good to have friends,
Thrawn said, his voice going oddly wistful.
I'm told that the Chiss have none.
That would indeed be a tragedy,
the Magus said.
Come, I would speak with you about how you will free our world, and what the cost of that freedom will be.
Chapter 11. Planetary guard duty, as Arulani had expected, was pretty monotonous. Even the presence of alien warships lurking in Ascendancy space couldn't change the fact that the Vigilant was spending all its time going around and around Spacia, staying clear of edgy patrol ships and nervous civilian transports, and waiting for potential threats to show themselves. So far, they hadn't. But Arulani knew better than to let her officers and warriors grow complacent. That only worked to the enemy's advantage. Drills, snap alerts, and other physical and mental challenges became the order of the day. Still, after a few such unexpected challenges, even that grew to be routine. At least the Vigilant wasn't getting the quiet hostility that some of the other expansionary defense fleet ships were experiencing with their new duties. Most of the major Chiss worlds were dominated by families of the Nine or the 40, and too many of those elites saw any intrusion into what they considered their territory to be an insult to their own defense capabilities. Spacia, while technically controlled by the Klar and Abik, also included the Kincrew and Chap families in their patrol system, and all four of them were generally willing to defer to the Stybla in matters of defense policy. The Stybla themselves, given their family's position at the lower end of the 40, were more than happy to accept whatever Chila and Naperar offered in the way of warships. Arulani was sitting in her command chair, trying to think up something new to throw at her crew, when Larsium stirred in his seat at the comm station.
Admiral, he called across the bridge. We're receiving a transmission from Supreme General Barkeef.
Acknowledge and connect, Arulani said, keying her mic. Supreme General Barkeef, this is Admiral Arulani.
Good day, Admiral,
Barkeef's voice came back.
I understand things are still quiet at Spacia?
Yes, sir, so far, Arulani said. Are you expecting that to change?
That's a good question,
Barkeef said.
I presume you've been following the reports on our mysterious Jixtus and his travels?
Yes, sir, I have, Arulani said, scowling to herself.
So far, the Kilji battlecruiser had visited 6 planets, and Jixtus had conversed with 4 senior officials of the 9 and 13 of the 40. At this rate, he'd have most of the Chiss hierarchy covered within the month.
Is Spacia next on his schedule?
We don't know,
Barkeef said.
So far, we haven't been able to find a pattern in his travels relating to either planetary position or rank among the Aristocra. But that brings us to another, more pressing issue. Since last night, 2 more of the 9 have begun moving their warships around.
Wonderful, Arulani said, wincing. That makes what? 5 of them?
Correct,
Barkeef said.
What's ominous about these particular repositionings is that they're not focused on bolstering the family's own defenses, but seem to be aimed at adding an extra presence to Pomrio, Aragol, and Zodlak stronghold worlds.
The one Jixtus is pointing fingers at.
Arulani shook her head.
This is ridiculous.
I agree,
Barkeef said.
And under normal circumstances, I'd say it was unthinkable that anyone would pay 2 seconds' attention to the ravings of an alien. But with all the uncertainties and suspicions still swirling around the Hoxim incident, old rivalries are bubbling closer to the surface.
And naturally, the family's protests of innocence
do nothing to change those suspicions.
Of course not,
Bakif said heavily.
Their patriarchs continue to deny any involvement with aliens. They say Gixtus is lying, and that the vid he's been showing around is a complete hoax.
Is it a hoax, sir?
Arlani asked.
That is indeed the question,
Bakif said.
The quality of the vid is pretty low, and I'm told the enhancement techniques everyone's been scrubbing it with are as likely to create new parts of the image as they are to provide clarity to what's already there. More concerning is information I received less than an hour ago that...
Just a moment, sir,
Arlani cut in, scooping up Requestus. It was bad form to interrupt Superior, but a sudden thought had occurred to her, and it needed to be chased down before the conversation went elsewhere and she lost the mental thread.
You said everyone was using enhancements. Does that include the Claw?
Their report included an enhanced version of the vid. Yes,
Bakif said.
What are you thinking?
The everyone part, sir,
she said, searching rapidly through the Vigilance data records. There was the folder. There was the file.
Patriarch Thurfian's report said that Gixtus had offered the myth military assistance, didn't it?
Yes, it did,
Bakif confirmed.
He also said he turned it down flat.
As did all the other patriarchs,
Arlani said.
All of them except Patriarch Rivlex. His report didn't even mention such an offer being made, let alone that he'd turned it down.
Interesting,
Bakif said, a fresh level of attentiveness in his voice.
And Rivlex is the only one who sent someone to the Whetstone to talk directly to Gixtus. I believe he claimed he just wanted one of his people to get a closer look at the battlecruiser.
Yes, that's what he said.
There it was.
I found what I was looking for, sir. Can you pull up the enhanced recordings from the myth and the Claw reports?
A moment.
There was a short pause.
I have them.
Please run them together, in parallel.
Another short pause. Arlani also ran the 2 5-second clips just to double-check her memory.
Interesting,
Bakif said.
The car version is a quarter second longer than anyone else's. I hadn't even noticed.
It's not at all obvious, Arlani said. I happened to notice, but had forgotten about it until you used the word everyone.
Any thoughts as to what it means?
Nothing solid, Arlani said. I'm assuming the Claw got more of the recording, either as a gift or for a price. And when they needed to send a copy of the enhanced recording, they missed slightly with their editing.
Or else Gixtus gave them a longer recording to throw that precise suspicion on the family.
Yes, sir. That's also possible,
Arlani conceded.
Either way, a pattern is starting to emerge with respect to the Claw,
Bakif said thoughtfully.
A longer recording, their visit to the Whetstone, and the fact that they immediately sent the Orison off on a tour of major Claw worlds and facilities. Add to that, the Orison's possibly coincidental presence at Jamiron when the alleged Zodlak and Aragol patrol ships attacked 4 of their freighters, and the pattern starts to become a bit disturbing.
Arlani frowned. The first report from Senior Captain Zyenda had said the freighter's attackers were unidentified, with the follow-up from Captain Roscu stating that they were in fact Zodlak and Aragol. Now Bakif was adding the word alleged to the mix.
I take it something new has been added,
she asked.
Indeed it has,
Bakif said.
I was starting to tell you about it when you pointed out this other curious bit of information.
Yes, sir,
Arlani said, feeling her face warming.
My apologies for the interruption.
No apology needed, Admiral,
O'Keefe assured her.
The information was both useful and timely. As for this latest revelation, I'm still trying to decide whether to release it or keep it private for the moment. I've been talking with Senior Captain Zayinda, who passed it on to me, and, well, I think it might be best to let her give you the details. Give me a moment to bring her into the discussion.
Yes, sir, Arlani said, frowning a little harder as she keyed Bakif's transmission from the bridge speaker to the more private command chair position. This whole thing was getting stranger and stranger.
Admiral, we've got company,
Utra-O called. Arlani looked up. The Vigilant's first officer was standing behind Oskim and the weapons console, pointing out the viewport at a ship that had appeared in the distance.
As we speak, so we get,
Utra-O continued.
It's the Orison.
Is it now? Arlani said. Interesting timing. Junior Commander Lossium, give them a call and ask them what they're doing here. Frame it as an offer to assist in whatever they've got planned.
Yes, ma'am,
the comm officer said, and turned to his board.
All right, Admiral. I have Senior Captain Zayinda tied in now,
Bakif announced.
Senior Captain, Arlani said, catching Wautro's eye and beckoning to her. I trust you're doing well.
I am, Admiral. Thank you,
Zayinda said.
Interesting tidbit about the Klar version of the Kilji recording. I confess, I missed that completely.
In a situation like this, it doesn't matter who finds the pieces, as long as they're found by somebody,
Arlani said, as Wutro arrived beside her in range of the command chair's speaker.
I understand you found an important piece of your own.
I believe so, ma'am, yes,
Zayinda said.
I had our analysts take a close look at Captain Roscoe's images of the attacking patrol boats. As I presume you're aware, Ergol warships are decorated with subtle dot-in-line decoratives laid out in wave-like patterns, supposedly evoking memories of their family's prominence in the old seafaring days.
I've heard that, yes,
Arlani confirmed, though she would have been hard-pressed to come up with it on her own. Every family had its own quirks and traditions, and it was nearly impossible to keep track of all of them.
It was originally to help them identify a ship that had been damaged beyond other means of recognition, wasn't it?
Yes, ma'am,
Zayinda said.
The key point is that all the patterns are similar, but since they're done by hand, no two of them are exactly alike.
And you were able to identify which patrol ships were at Jamiron?
Arlani asked.
That's the problem,
Bakif put in.
The two Ergol patterns were exactly the same.
Arlani frowned up at Wutra-O.
And Roscoe didn't notice?
I doubt Captain Roscoe cared,
Bakif said.
But it gets worse. Continue, Senior Captain.
Not only are the two patterns identical,
Zayinda said,
but they match that of one of the Ergol patrol ships that was at Hoxim.
Well, isn't that interesting?
Utra-O murmured.
Isn't it?
Arlani agreed, feeling a tightness in her throat.
So someone's counterfeiting Chiss patrol ships and throwing them at Chiss freighters.
So it would seem,
Bakif said.
I assume Roscoe has been in contact with her patriarch, but we have no idea what their thinking is about this situation.
Maybe we should ask her,
Wutra-O suggested.
She's right outside our viewport.
Interesting,
Bakif said.
I knew the Orison had left Jamiron, but didn't know it was headed for Spossia. I wonder what it's doing there.
The Klar are a major presence here,
Arlani reminded him.
It may be that she's just checking out their defenses and preparedness.
That's possible,
Bakif said.
As Senior Captain Wutro said, we could just ask her.
Not a good idea, Arlani said, throwing a scowl at her first officer. The last thing she'd wanted was to try for a friendly conversation with the woman who'd once been her first officer on the patrol cruiser Perala. Especially since those weren't particularly pleasant memories for either of them.
Captain Roscoe and I didn't part on the best of terms. I doubt she'd be willing to talk to me.
Maybe she'd talk to someone else,
Zyanda suggested.
I don't know what the history is here, but this seems too good an opportunity to pass up.
I agree,
Bakeev said.
What about you, Senior Captain Wutro? The Kiwu family has taken a pretty neutral stance in the current situation.
More than willing, sir,
Wutro confirmed.
Admiral?
Arlani glowered at the approaching ship.
Junior Commander Lossium, did you get through to the Orison?
Yes, Admiral,
Lossium said hesitantly.
Captain Roscoe acknowledges our contact and our presence. She also declines to share her mission with us.
In other words, she said it was none of our business?
Wutro asked. Lossium winced.
More or less, ma'am.
She wasn't any friendlier to me, if that helps any,
Zyanda offered.
It doesn't, and she's wrong,
Bakeef said firmly.
With alien warships threatening the Ascendancy, the Defense Force is entitled to request any and all relevant information. Tie me in, Admiral. I want to talk to her.
Excuse me, Supreme General,
Wutro put in.
With all respect, sir, I believe you offered me first crack at her.
You think you can bring the necessary weight to bear, Senior Captain?
I don't think weight will be a factor, sir,
Wutro said.
I know a type, and I think I can get her talking.
Very well, Senior Captain. You've got 1 minute.
Thank you, sir,
Wutro said.
Junior Commander, give me comm to the Orison.
You have comm, ma'am,
Lossium confirmed.
Captain Roscoe, this is Senior Captain Wutro, First Officer of the Vigilant,
Wutro called.
Senior Captain, I already told your comm officer I can't talk about my assignment.
A woman's terse voice came back.
Don't worry. I wasn't going to ask,
Wutro said.
I understand family business. It's like that with the Kiwu family, too. No, this is personal. Just between you and me. I was hoping you could tell me why Admiral Arlani flounced off the bridge in a snit when she heard you were here.
Arlani twisted her head to look up at Wutro, feeling her mouth drop open. Wutro caught her eye, gave a quick shake of her head, and motioned for Arlani to remain silent.
She did?
Roscoe asked, some of the animosity fading into a sort of malicious amusement.
Really?
Oh, you should have seen it,
Wutro assured her, giving Arlani a sly smile.
It was like she didn't even want to share the same patch of space with you. I've never seen a loser that way before. You have any idea what it was all about?
I know exactly what it was about,
Roscoe said, a slight hesitation impinging on the satisfaction in her voice.
This is a secure calm, I assume?
I sure hope so,
Wutro said, putting some caution into her voice.
Any of this gets back to the Admiral, and I'll be up to my neck in rabbit grouses. You know the type.
All too well,
Roscoe said.
So she's gotten more vindictive in her old age, has she? Good. Let her past eat her from the inside.
Trust me, her past is having a fine meal,
Wutro assured her.
Come on, don't keep me in suspense. She could be back any minute. What's going on?
The short version, when she was my commander, she covered up a serious policy violation by one of her officers,
Roscoe said.
I called them both on it and had them both brought up on charges. They both managed to skate free, but I imagine it made a nice mark on her perfect record. She's resented me ever since.
Arlani sighed silently. She hadn't resented Roscoe then, and she didn't resent her now. But Roscoe apparently saw things differently. So which one of them exactly was being eaten from the inside?
Wow,
Utro said, sounding awed.
And she was your superior?
That takes a lot of courage.
It just takes conviction and integrity,
Roscoe said.
Something the people who covered for her and Thrawn apparently missed out on. But that's all right. Let her have her nice white uniform and her ship and no family. I hope I was at least a bump along that road.
Given a reaction just now, I'd say you were more than just a bump,
Utro said.
Though it doesn't much matter where you are on the command ladder right now. Not with whatever the hell is going on. At least you just have the Clar family to take care of and won't be getting caught in any crossfires. So what is going on? You have any idea?
Of course I do,
Roscoe said disdainfully.
I'm not surprised Teela hasn't figured it out yet. But then they're the same people who were blind to Arlani and Thrawn. Now they're just as blind to the Dasklow.
Blind is blind, and a lot of people never learn, Utro agreed. So what are the Dasklow up to this time?
Just more of their usual conniving,
Roscoe said.
They're letting this Jixtus alien get everyone worked up and looking at everyone else while they secretly build their family fleet up past the legal limits.
Sounds nasty,
Utro said.
They're figuring to take out the Claw once and for all, I suppose.
Or at least knock us down,
Roscoe said.
Maybe even try to push us out of the Nine.
That's crazy,
Utro protested.
Your family fleets are the same size, aren't they? How do they think they can go up against you?
Weren't you listening?
Roscoe growled.
I said they're going to build up their fleet. Only it's not going to look like they're doing it.
Sorry, but you've lost me.
It's very simple,
Roscoe said patiently.
They're going to look like they've got lots of help. They're going to come at us pretending the Ergol, Pomrio, and Zodlak are supporting them.
That's exactly what Jixtus has been saying,
Utro said eagerly, as if her slower brain had finally managed to latch on to something important.
He said the Dasklow are building an alliance with those three families.
That's what he says,
Roscoe said.
Maybe even what he thinks, but he's wrong. There will be lots of ships with the Dasklow when the attack comes, but they won't be from the Ergol or anyone else. They'll all be Dasklow.
Utro raised her eyebrows questioningly at Arlani. Arlani shrugged back.
Ask her,
she mouthed. Utro nodded acknowledgement.
Sorry, but you've lost me again,
she said to Roscoe.
It's very simple,
Roscoe said again, her patient tone shifting into the patronizing mode that Arlani remembered driving all the rest of the Parala's officers crazy.
The Dasklow are making fake Ergol patrol ships.
They're what? How?
With a little sleight of hand and a lot of sheer audacity,
Roscoe said, clearly enjoying Wutro's apparent astonishment in the face of Roscoe's own superior knowledge and intellect.
Patrol ships all have the same basic hull, after all. You pick up someone else's ship, copy the crest and family design ornamentation onto a freshly built ship of your own, and there's your fake.
But if they were caught... No, that can't be,
Utro said.
How could they get away with it?
They'd never get away with it.
They already have,
Roscoe said, her voice now going dark.
No one on Chela would ever notice, but two of the alleged Aragol patrol ships that attacked our freighters at Jamiron were exact duplicates of each other. Obviously supposed to make us think the Aragol have gone rogue. Justice, obviously, built by the Dasklo.
Why is that obvious?
Utro asked.
I don't doubt you. That's the kind of thing the Dasklo would do.
But how do you know it's not the Aragol themselves?
One, the Aragol aren't smart enough to come up with this,
Roscoe said.
Two, they don't have the facilities that could hide this much new construction. Three, they don't have the bloodlust and sheer unmitigated gall.
Okay,
Utro said slowly, as if she was still having trouble following the logic.
But we've all seen Justice's vid. It shows the Aragols and other ships running a combat demonstration for the Dasklo. Doesn't that mean all four families are working together?
That's what everyone thinks, because everyone else was too cheap to buy the entire vid,
Roscoe said acidly.
We were willing to pay, which is why we know the whole story. In fact, I don't think even Chixtus has a complete handle on it.
Well, don't keep me in suspense,
Utro said.
If the Dasklo frigate wasn't watching some war game, what was it doing?
There was a short pause.
Sorry,
Roscoe said, the fire and passion suddenly gone.
I can't talk about it. In fact, I've probably already said too much.
Oh, come on,
Utro cajoled, making a face at Arlani.
So close.
You can't cut me off now. What if no one else figures it out? I'll be stuck wondering about it forever.
Welcome to a life of not getting everything you want,
Roscoe said, with an edge of bitterness.
But don't worry. You won't have to wander forever. Just another few days.
A few days? Is that when you'll tell the rest of the Ascendancy?
Nice talking to you, Senior Captain. Watch your back around your glorious Admiral.
There was a tone.
Transmission ended, Larcium confirmed.
Utro huffed out a breath.
Sorry, Admiral,
she said.
Not your fault, Arlani assured her. I'm actually surprised she gave as much as she did.
I meant sorry about saying you flounced off the bridge,
Utro said.
You know, come to think of it, I'm not sure I've ever actually seen anyone flounce, but I've always liked the word.
They'll try to use it more in conversation, Arlani said. So she did notice that the attackers at Jamiron were duplicates.
But completely missed the point of who was making them,
Bakeef said back into the conversation.
So the Battle Dreadnought aliens weren't simply armoring their own freighters or transports at the supposedly wrecked Nicardoon base. They were putting shells on them and turning them into Chiss patrol ships.
Apparently so, Arlani agreed. Now that I think about it, the ships we saw at the refurbishing station were just the right size and shape for that kind of transformation. And the big ship we thought was a mobile repair dock would have worked as a Chiss freighter,
Utro added.
So what are they up to?
Zyenda asked.
And what is this Dasklo grand scheme that Roscoe thinks is underway?
First, I think we can assume that all her suspicions about the Dasklo are wrong,
Bakeef said.
It's clear that Justice is controlling this whole narrative and manipulating everyone, including the Klar. Maybe even especially the Klar. You two keep talking. I'm going to drop out while I check on something.
Yes, sir,
Arlani said, thinking back over the conversation Utro and Roscoe had just had.
All right. Roscoe thinks the Dasklaw are planning some aggressive military move against the Klar. What could she have seen in the rest of Jixtus's vid that would convince her of that?
I was just reviewing the free sample,
Zyenda said slowly.
Odd thought. Did you see the way the Dasklaw frigate lifted its bow just a bit at the end of the vid? That looked almost like it was setting up to launch plasma spheres at the Aragol.
Hold on, let me check,
Arlani said, pulling up her copy and running it. Zyenda was right. The move was definitely there.
Could be, she agreed. Pretty subtle, but it's there.
Or it could be setting up to aim and fire a tractor beam,
Utro added.
Or it could be doing both,
Zyenda said.
You think that's what's on the rest of the vid? The Dasklaw flickering the Aragol, and then pulling it in for a close look at its hull design?
Maybe,
Arlani said.
Roscoe did talk about someone picking up someone else's ship.
Which would ensure they could get the hull decoratives correct,
Zyenda said.
Right, Arlani said. She also said she didn't think Jixtus knew exactly what had happened. At the distance the vid was taken from, a sphere barrage would barely register, even with enhancement, and the tractor would be completely invisible.
Only that scenario doesn't make any sense,
Zyenda said.
The Aragol are already Dasklaw allies. They wouldn't have to go to all that effort just to get a good look at an Aragol patrol ship's hull decoration.
And the Dasklaw would know Aragol hull decoratives are never identical,
Arlani said.
All of which is moot, of course, since we're assuming the whole vid was faked.
True,
Zyenda said.
A fake confrontation and fake ships, courtesy of whoever was recording the Hoxim battle.
They probably got patterns for the Zodlak and Pomrio ships that were there too while they were at it,
Arlani said, scowling at the vid.
And are likely also using those same recordings to study Chiss battle tactics.
Zyenda muttered a sudden curse.
Including how to shoot at Chiss warships without doing any serious damage,
she said in a chagrined voice.
That's why those patrol ships were able to